So we're about at that stage where we're getting a lot of interest. I mean, we've done a lot of work within the English department and recently modelled something for the English department faculty members.
That's right.
And now other departments who we'll be talking about are getting involved, and we're at that stage where we're sort of starting to think about what it is we're doing.
Exactly, yeah. And it's very much a work in progress still. Mm-hmm. I think we started off with not many very clear ideas about what we were doing and what our purpose was. And I do think that's developed in the last 9 months or so.
Sure.
Since I've arrived and since you came in,
yeah.
and we began to work together on these things.
It's also because it's kind of a new context, isn't it? So, I mean, I knew this work, I experienced this work in a drama education context.
Quite.
In schools.
Quite.
And as a practitioner, and you'd also worked within academia for a few years. Mm. And it was just now about this context of introducing this kind of open space learning to higher education.
Absolutely, Johnny. And I think open space learning is probably the best available term that we have for it at the mm-hmm. moment. I'm not, I know this term is used in other areas for various other things that are not what we do.
Mm-hmm.
However, Jonathan Neelands has coined this term for it, and it's a good one. And I think it's related to notions of inactive learning, to
mm-hmm.
kinesthetic learning, and to notions of embodied learning. And
mm-hmm.
it's about
mm-hmm.
Interrelating with one's own physicality in the performance space, and also to some extent functioning as an ensemble, and bringing to learning these kinds of notions.
What this does is it connects to what sort of has been an interest for me for quite a while is, you know, what happens in a theatrical process.
Yes.
And it makes me think about what rehearsal.
Yes.
What is rehearsal,
yes,
and what
indeed.
Is a rehearsal process?
Indeed.
And it is a learning experience. Mm. And it's a learning experience for any group, any group of practitioners, whether they're professional workers, or whether they are students, or whether they are school children, or whatever capacity is happening. The theatrical process, moving from a shared vision, a shared concept through rehearsal to the ultimate deadline of performance, and beyond that through, you know, the subsequent and repeated performance. It's the most incredible kind of group learning experience
That's right.
You could have.
I agree. And I think part of what we do is the trust element of it. You
mm-hmm.
know, you have to realise that we're all learning
mm-hmm.
in these workshop environments, and that again, as Jonathan Neelan says, power has to be uncrowned to some extent,
mm-hmm.
In that you allow students to learn from one another as much as they may be learning from you. And
yes.
that's absolutely essential. And we've discovered that this works. You know, it's been theorised by people like Boal and Fourier and others.
Yes, yes.
But you actually do it, and you find that, extraordinarily enough, there are results.
Mm. And it's sort of like, you know, rehearsal space has to be a safe space. It's
yes.
a space in which things can
yes.
be tried out, but, you know, it connects to the idea of, you know, like failure and,
yes.
and the idea, I mean, I, as you know, run the resident theatre company here, Fail Better, and that's based on the Beckett's idea of to be an artist is to fail,
yes,
there's no other dare fail.
And it's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, and trying again and failing better. And in a rehearsal space, has to legitimise failure.
Has to, yeah.
And repeated, or what our Vice Chancellor recently called the structured failure of the laboratory,
yes,
when he was talking
exactly,
about science.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I mean, that conversation he had was very interesting with the Joseph Roach. It was
yeah.
fascinating about the way that we're actually far closer to the sciences than we think we are in many ways
mm-hmm.
when we do these kinds of performance experiments, which is what they are, really.
Yeah. Well, and a rehearsal space is an experimental
yes.
space and has to be. And it's that idea of that phrase he used of structured failure, that's terribly useful.
Mm.
And also, when I went to this this conference in Strathclyde recently,
yeah.
and Ray Land presented on troublesome knowledge
yes.
and threshold
yes.
concepts, and that connects with these ideas and also starts to think about learning as loss,
yes.
and that what higher education is, or the troublesome knowledge in our disciplines, whatever those disciplines
mm.
are, is there are thresholds that the student has to go through, and once you go through that space, you can't go back.
Quite.
You have, there's a, perhaps resistance, and there's a difficulty, and there's a liminality to that space.
Mm.
But once you pass through it, you see things new, in a new way,
yes.
in a new way, and nothing can really be the same again. So you lose something.
Mm.
But you only lose something through being prepared to lose it, and
yeah.
being prepared to fail.
Right.
And then you gain a new a new understanding, and perhaps that's what, you know, we want from our students within higher education, something slightly more advanced.
I think we should be, that's what we should be looking for. It's exactly the kind of thing we should be looking for. We've forgotten when we sit down in the in this regulated seminar environment at which the tutor stands or sits at the head of the room and manipulates the whiteboard or the AV materials and the students sit in a square around, that this is not the only way to learn. You know, the workshop model offers the ability for multiple intelligences to come into play, I think, in really important ways.
Yes.
And that it enables what you've just said about threshold concepts and going breaking barriers through which there's no return.
Yes, yes.
And I think, you know, one of the ways that this works is only through the space. You can't do these things in seminar rooms that we're trying to do here. And part of the battle for us here has been to convince people that it's the space that makes all the difference.
It is, and it's also like, you know, having that flexibility to actually bring the students into the space and say, you know, we are going to study this text in this space, and that'll give you a clarity that perhaps you couldn't find elsewhere. I mean, the best example is perhaps the Waiting for Godot workshops that we did with first years on literature in the modern world, which was, you know, all those students who normally would have the lecture and the seminar to study Beckett's seminal text came here instead.
Yeah.
They had a lecture that emphasised performance, but they came to us. And, you know, I ran these sessions and you evaluated these sessions, and we've had some tremendously positive feedback.
The feedback's been wonderful from those sessions, from students, from tutors, because all the tutors were required to attend as well, which I thought was a very significant aspect of it. And this was really the first time we'd managed to embed across the English cohort work of this kind. And it was thanks to Jeremy Treglone and his willingness to allow us to do this.
And endorsing it.
His full endorsement of it.
And making sure that it's therefore taken seriously and its value is then negotiated in that process. But, you know, it's sort of like there's a clarity, particularly with that text, which, you know, so often misunderstood and misrepresented and made unnecessarily difficult by various layers of critical discussion. Actually, by just saying, this is a performance text, this is Beckett turning to the theatre for a reason and writing ideas through theatrical, through performance, making, you know, asking theatrical questions. And they see that. So they suddenly experience the silence that Vladimir and Estragon experience. They experience the stasis. They experience Lucky's stream of consciousness in that workshop, which brings a truth in it that can only be found when felt. Not
I agree. Experiential learning. It's Kolb. We're back to Kolb's experiential learning. And it's something that works. I mean, it was, it reminds me again of the fact that when we're working with plays, we're working with dramatic text. It's text, but it's also there to be performed, and this gets lost sometimes in English departments. And I think it was a chap that you met at Strathclyde, I think, who had something to say about this and the way
Shakespeare engineer.
Taught it. Yes,
the engineer after running the session who said, "Yes, well, why would you teach Shakespeare any other way?" And it's sort of like, "Well, that's interesting. You should say that." But yes, because for him, the model was so obvious. It was, these are plays that are written to be performed, therefore you get the students up and working practically and thinking about problems of interpretation in performance.
And why would you not do that?
And
it's what's, you know, one of the things that astonished me on my feedback forms from the Shakespeare and Selected Dramatists course was that so many students said they wanted Shakespeare for the poetry. You know? Although there was that was balanced by one young man who said poetry, you know, Shakespeare is rubbish as poetry. We don't want it as that. And there remains this dichotomy, and this is something I think we still have yet to fully overcome.
Part of what they discover about the poetry is through performance.
Yeah.
So they can't have this sort of slightly odd notion of, I like the poetry, therefore I don't have to think about performance. Yeah. I mean, part of what we're doing is proving that performance is you know, poetry is performative, and I know that you know the David Morley and the writing tutors and students do a lot of exploration into that. But also, as you know, as Carol Rutter would say, the idea of writing is only really read when performed.
Yes, I think that's a truism, but it's a very true one. And I think, you know, sometimes it's interesting that other disciplines other than English are sometimes much more amenable
to philosophy, for example.
Yeah, I mean, you've done a lot of work.
Yeah, I mean, I started with the Beckett with philosophy, and we were looking at his more philosophical, or the philosophical questions that emerge from plays like Play or Not I, about identity and about subjectivity and authorship and all those big questions. But it was working practically and working through performance that they actually got a concrete experience that they could think about.
Yes.
And then actually the challenge of saying to them, occupy this space, create a new play in using these dramaturgical ideas, but out of your own materials and your own ideas. Mm. And then they suddenly found a sort of a new way of thinking philosophically, a kind of a sort of dramaturgical way of thinking, which they found very exciting. And then, interestingly, we then went and explored poetry the following year. We looked at T.S. Eliot's The Wasteland, which has a slight performance history, but it's also, because of the fragmented voices, a text that sustains that kind of, that concept of performance. And actually, you open up the text. Yes. Sometimes, particularly in poetry, through thinking, through performance, or allowing the systems of rehearsal to become, you know, learning quite, experiences. Quite. We are, you know, now planning a series of events that might actually mean that we are fully embedded in their courses.
Which is an extraordinary step, really, to take.
Philosophers,
One imagines philosophy as this intensely cerebral, on one's own kind of academic discipline.
Mm.
And here's a demonstration that it's not, and even disciplines like that can be approached through the methods that we're trying to use here.
Well, it's like we are planning some, so it's an early stage, but we'll be working with chemistry.
Again, is an amazing step forward. Mm. A workshop on the periodic table for the whole first year chemistry cohort would have been an unthinkable prospect, I suspect, before the Capital Centre arrived.
But we're going to try and do it, aren't we?
We're going to try and
They're going to come over here and they are going to have done some work on research on the elements, and we are going to embody the periodic table. We're going to explore the periodic table in an open space, and that will be a compulsory experience for their first years.
They'll be required to do it.
Yes.
And this will be a performance piece. It won't just be sitting motionless in the space.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be doing things. Mm-hmm. They'll be enacting material that they've learned. They'll be, and one of the interesting things for me about it is that it seems now so amenable to what we're doing. They're each going to be given an element to concentrate on, and then they'll be placed within the blocks of elements, and then they'll interact together what we hope will be interesting ways.
Yeah, well, I just loved the idea that, you know, when we were first talking to them about what this might be, that, you know, what is it in chemistry? What is it in chemical knowledge? That might sustain an exploration of this kind, and it was thinking about elements and within how elements are grouped in the periodic table and how they behave in relation to each other and the conflicts that exist and the all of those, and then you're suddenly into something hugely dramatic because you're into naturalism of behaviour and how people respond to their environment and how certain situations you place on things will have a certain effect. So, I mean, we're not making a play out of it, but we're using these kind of ways of working to think about, you know, these other disciplines. And it's very early days, but it's quite fruitful already.
It's already quite fruitful, as you say. However, we're very, very well aware that we may fail at this. It may fall down.
But again, like rehearsal, we have to legitimise. You know, we have to be allowed to fail better. We have to be allowed, you know, if you don't take risk, nothing happens.
And this is a major risk, and it's a major risk for the chemists. Mm. And I'm very, and to some extent, surprised that it's one that they're willing to take at this stage.
Well, you know, all credit to them, really.
And they were tremendously helpful in the process of designing this. In fact, in many ways, I mean, they didn't design the detail of it, but many of the ideas that now exist in this workshop to come were theirs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important, as we try and embed this, that that we do this, that we pass this on and give people the equipment and the tools to be able to use it.
But we do need, I mean, it does partially depend on people coming willing to take that risk, because what they recognise, presumably, about, you know, a high quality teaching learning experience is that, you know, innovation comes through risk, and it comes through being totally immersed in some sort of experience. And if we look back and think about those moments in our lives when we've learnt the most about a subject or even about ourselves, they're often in highly pressurised environments that have emerged from a long period of gestation or a long period of trying and failing.
Mm. Yes, I agree.
Finding and losing.
I agree. I mean, we've, you know, we've even got stuff now going with the maths department, which pleased us both greatly when they turned up. And one of their undergraduates there wants to put on a playlet or a performance, an interactive one about systems theory.
Yeah.
And he wants to open this up to the Maths Society, which I think has 300 members or something, and do a series of performances in the studio. And this is I think a terrific idea that we've got people coming in to do this.
But what's nice is, again, I mean, he's not just wanting to make a play about maths. He's actually wanting to find a way of staging mathematical problems about finding a new way to think about maths that will, you know, which will be liberating for him, but also actually for certain students might make suddenly something make sense. They might pass through the threshold through that kind of experience because they're allowed to play with it in a different way. And you've mentioned Boal already, and obviously we therefore think of Forum Theatre, which is what I was talking to the student about. But, you know, the idea that an audience won't just come and be a passive audience, there'll be an active audience, there'll be an audience who might have to become a protagonist within this, and then understand again through doing.
I mean, what interested me about him is that I don't think he'd ever heard of Boal, but he was talking about Boal's methods independently, which is fascinating stuff, I think. And I do, you know, the interdisciplinarity of what we're doing there is really starting to become apparent. I mean,
yes.
That we ran in May on the 15th included people from medicine, from maths, from the business school,
from theatre studies,
and there was all kinds of different presentations there, using these methods to learn, and it's a very exciting time, and people. The levels of enthusiasm I felt at that conference for this kind of work were very, very high indeed, and I think we can only go forward on that.
Yeah, and what was nice about that event was it sort of allowed people to think in a cross-curricular way.
Yes,
That's kind of a school's term, cross-curricular, but I suppose that, you know, also that interdisciplinary about what is it that makes a good teaching experience. What is innovative teaching in higher education? Where does teaching sit in relation to research? How can we open up research environments through exciting pedagogic events or whatever? Indeed. And actually that starts to sort of slightly blur this traditional polarization of teaching and research.
It starts to
think about both of them as facets of academic practice that could come together, and perhaps the most exciting when they come together. And I'm doing a lot of work at the moment on a TQEF Teacher Quality Enhancement Fund scheme, which brings, you know, teaching and research and learning right together in the same experience, focusing on digital archives. And we also have some students, undergraduate research students, working on that, where they are, as undergraduates, working as part of a research team. So, you know, perhaps sometimes sort of knocking down those traditional boundaries opens up new experiences.
Yes, I think absolutely you're right, it does.
And who'd have thought that day that we'd have people being the weird sisters from Macbeth.
That's right.
Yes. From the previous vice chancellor of the university to other colleagues. And, you know, that's been a very successful a workshop. Staging the Witches,
yes. It's been terrific. I mean, it's the first one that we've been able to really take out on the road, as it were, and use as an exemplar for other people. Because, I mean, a big part of what we're doing here is attempting to disseminate this beyond the bounds of the university. Yes. And I think your first step in that direction was Strathclyde.
It was, but I mean, what was interesting about the workshop was, I mean, it's very simple in that it just takes the opening scene from Macbeth and allows, gets people almost immediately speaking Shakespeare and then visualising it through a series of tableaux. Mm. But then you start to feed in those images from its performance history through the archive. And then people think about interpretation and, okay, this is the first scene of a play, and what is this play about, and how does reading The Witches set up what Macbeth and Lady Macbeth are going to experience? So all those questions emerge, but then they get to make it again, and it's because it's based on their doing, And then there's this sort of input, and then it's all about, well, how do we synthesize that towards performance or whatever? Right. It's been very successful in all these different contexts, which is surprising. Yeah. It was local school children who came...
Yeah, you did that with the ACE people.
ACE Day at universities, a sort of a widening participation event. And then we did it with our third years of Shakespeare.
Yeah, my course and Carol's
Yes. Course, some of whom had chosen to do a practical experience of Shakespeare, some who hadn't, but they were both equally engaged in it, for, you know, probably from different standpoints. And then indeed, you know, using it as a model of practice, so the Strathclyde event that you mentioned, which is which was in March, and it was the European Consortium of Innovative Universities, of which Warwick's a member. And there was various people there from, you know, deputy vice-chancellors, pro-vice-chancellors, to people who run these centres of academic practice or learning development, or pedagogic researchers. And we just did it. And we did actually, we took out the room because it was in Loch Lomond.
Yes.
And it was a beautiful house that Strathclyde Uni have called Ross Priory. And we went out to the banks of Loch Lomond, and I said, so we're going to start the session by leaving.
It's wonderful. You contextualise Macbeth in that.
Yeah, well, it was great to be able to do Macbeth in those things, slightly gimmicky perhaps, but it was, you know, it was nice. And it was just actually really emphasised the idea of the experiential and taking them out of one of perhaps actually like leaving the space is the first thing you've got to do and have this experience that none of them will forget, I don't think.
No, I'm sure they won't. And I think it's really important that you say that. I think one of the fascinating things for me about this is the combination of mindfulness and playfulness that happens in the workshop environment promotes learning in a way that you simply can't have if you're sitting in front of somebody droning on in a lecture or you're merely having a conversation.
Mm.
There's the dimension... and there's an extra dimension added here through that, I think.
Well, I mean, the lecture's an interesting case because, I mean, you know, a lot of people do benefit from lecture, but obviously auditory learners primarily. And also in what's happening with the sort of, you know, at this point in digital history, the idea of the lecture, it could be available in other forms from now on.
So,
you know, how does it exist as a learning experience and how does it relate to the kind of things we're working on?
Well, I do think the lecture is very one-dimensional. I mean, it's a very... it's a very empirical way of receiving knowledge. There it is, put out in front of you, and you test it against your own thought processes, and if it's acceptable to you, you make notes on it. Similarly, you know, you've got the opposite in the seminar experience. The student's mind works on the ideas, and then that's put out into the seminar for discussion, and that's the kind of idealist position.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens in the workshop environment for me is that those positions combine into a kind of phenomenological model in which the student is gripped by something that they're simultaneously gripping, if you like. They're grasping and being grasped. And that promotes something really quite extraordinary.
Yeah, and it is play, but it's not just play. It's not just playfulness. There's also that mindfulness there. There's also spaces for reflection, for discussion. There's ways in which, as you've been exploring this year, critical information is fed in and used after these events. Sure. Also, in the case of the witches, you know, that visual information is part of the critical information that's been given in that context, but it kind of comes after their interpretation and has to be negotiated. What's specific here is that we're at the intersection of education and performance and literature in a higher education context. So it's just about applying all these different strands that we've been talking about to a new context and not therefore claiming it as this new thing.
No, indeed.
But just talking about what new thoughts and experiences it can give our students.
Quite. And can we theorise it differently? Can we theorise it across the disciplines? And can we combine research and learning in the ways that you've suggested earlier?
That's the challenge. That's the challenge ahead.
That is the challenge ahead.